Welcome to Turn Extension, a supplemental podcast for the Advanced Maneuvers YouTube channel.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Turn Extension. My name is Tony, and with us we have Kevin. You want to say hi, Kevin? And we have, as always, Gaston. He is back. Welcome, Gaston.
I'm amazed you let me back.
I know. Well, it's because we couldn't get any guests. Hey guys, thanks for coming and joining. We have a couple people in the chat area right now. So thanks for everyone who is live watching us right now. We got about 10 people. It's currently started. So we are going to jump in, talk about the battle boxes, right? But I guess beforehand, we had Nova open this weekend. Kevin, you're the only one there of us. I know you didn't play War Machine, but you played some games and you kind of touched on War Machine people. So kind of how did it go there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was an awesome time. Got to check out and hang out with the War Machine group in between rounds. Got to meet with the Delaware crew, or the crew from Tried and True YouTube channel. Great group of people. Had an awesome time. Can't wait to actually, get some War Machine games in Mark IV. I intentionally did not. I'm not playing Mark III because I don't want to have to unlearn Mark III in order to start playing Mark IV. So I will probably start doing things in Mark IV.
Nice. So overall, though, pretty good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you've never been to Nova Open, it's a great experience. You know, they've been running Nova, or they've been running War Machine for some time now. It's an awesome group. You know, you get to play games, you hang out. It's one of those communities where the second you start playing games with people, you've got friends for life.
Yeah, that's true. Which I always like, right? And I know Nova was always a really big part. Like, I used to love going to Nova Open back in the day. Hoping, we can do more stuff like PAX Unplugged and stuff like that for the future. But that's awesome, man. I'm happy you had a good time there. So we're going to jump in. I do have one more quick announcement. So this is for a local tournament, right? So to keep spurring up, all the excitement, for Mark III, or finishing off Mark III, I guess, and then going to Mark IV, between Delaware and Maryland, there's a local kind of like grudge match between the stores, and they're doing it called the Susquehanna Scuffle. So if anyone is free, there's three tickets left for this Saturday to join as a team, the three-man teams. So if you want, you can go to Tabletop Events, search for Susquehanna Shuffle 2022 to get more information. It's my plug. Like,
that sounds like a line dance.
It is.
Especially, right? Since you started, yes, with Scuffle and you went to a Shuffle.
It is Scuffle, not even a Shuffle, my fault. It's a Susquehanna Scuffle 2022. All right, cool. So we are going to talk about Battle Box. So each of us look through, different factions. I looked at Signar, or I guess I looked at Storm Legion.
And by looked, he means as soon as we had the discussion about doing Battle Box, he's like, I'm claiming Signar, and you guys can't have it. Get away.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, mine. Kevin ended up taking Sea Raiders, Orgoth, and then Gaston picked Winter Corps because Dusk is not out yet.
So picked Winter Corps after you took Signar and Kevin took Orgoth.
I mean, you and Kevin could have fought. I did offer to let someone else take Signar if they really wanted. Just the battle box was coming.
To your house.
To my house. I had already bought it. So
you literally ran out the door in your underwear to collect it off the doorstep.
I did. I was super excited. They're already built. They're primed. I got to get them painted, but we're on our way.
Actually, I'm kind of curious. One question, because now that you've worked with the resin material,
yeah,
how are you finding things that are like poles, kind of those long, thin pieces, like kind of the sturdiness of those?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, right? I think the swords have held up pretty well. I think when you come to the poles, they're pretty brittle, which is a little disappointing, right? They came wrapped up really well, but they did break. They broke right on the looked like the some of the lines. They went back together pretty well, but I have had to build Wolf's Hammer now twice. So they came, I set them outside for a little bit, then I gave them a little bit of a bath, and then I ended up breaking the top of the hammer off during the bath. And then just the pole itself, I had to glue back on the on the Striker model. So I've had about three broken parts that I've had to pin. I was concerned at first about the lines on the Courser. I think that's how you pronounce it. But actually, after between the bath and priming, I don't see it at all anymore, so I'm not worried about that. Everything else looked good, but yeah, the poles are not as exciting. I'm a little bummed about that.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Privateer Press did say, like, hey, we recognize we're messing around with new stuff and all that stuff. If you have something broken, contact us, and we will send you the part again, which I think is the mantra they had back in prior when they were working with other materials. If anything was messed up, contact us, we'll send you the thing.
Yep, yeah, and that's true, and that's what they've done.
I wasn't to pick on anybody or anything. I was legitimately curious because the times that I've worked with resin models and having them kind of be fragile in that specific case with the long, thin, you know, rods. And, like, if you even go back to, you know, like, Harbinger, I brass rodded her flag.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah, not, and you know, it happens.
Yeah, and that's true. Like, I think whenever I got, like, long poles, most of the time they had already broken anyways, or so you had to brass pole them pretty much the entire time. So, yeah, like, other than that, I'm excited. I'm excited to, you know, put them together. What we'll say is putting the magnets in were really easy, and the magnets are pretty strong. So I know someone I talked to was concerned about the magnets before, and they felt that at Gen Con they felt pretty weak. But when I was playing with them, I mean, they're strong. So I'm happy about that. All right, so with that being said, right, Herman, Gaston, why don't you go first talking about your the Winter Corps. Sorry, my daughter was yelling in the background.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to hear you trying to, like, get off camera at the same time as your child's, like, going crazy.
Oh.
I'm really enjoying it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So, and I mean, honestly, like, you know, I was joking that I got stuck with Kador, but, you know, I've been a huge Kador fan for the past 15 years. I've only ever played Kador. You know, I followed them ever since the Childlike Empress asked Quasimodo to go collect the keys from the key house in order to open the Kador under the mountain and unleash all power. I love the fluff, you know, for the fatherland. We're going to do this.
I can, oh my gosh. 100%. I'm just groaning over here.
Well, that's the way the stories worked, right?
Right, yeah, no, totally, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, just an accurate depiction whatsoever.
So,
especially for the fatherland part.
On that, like, I remember, like, we'd all go out to TempleCon and stuff, and we'd buy the anthology books, and everyone would read them. And then, like, Pokey would be like, oh my gosh, it was so exciting when, like, Morgul did this. And I'm like, I just read the same book as you, and I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
I think it's been
went completely past me every time.
I think it's been well established in our group. No matter what game system you're in, Gaston, you're not exactly the lore guy.
Yeah, you're not as big of a fan of the lore.
You're the mask guy for a reason.
Yes.
Look, all I know is that I'm playing the good guys and you're playing the bad guys. And I think it's kind of weird that I'm always playing good guys in these game systems. Like, you'd think that at some point you guys would want to play the good guys, but no. It's really
good,
it's kind of strange to me.
Bad.
You're terrible.
I'm the one with the gun.
Speaking of guns. So.
Hey, real quickly. Thanks, Huron, for the subscription.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So.
Right.
One of the things, you know, so Tony had kind of thrown out this challenge and this idea of, you know, we want to talk through the battle boxes, which basically break down to either one or two spoiled casters, and then just all warjacks. And for better or for worse, my concern about that was kind of talking just straight about that is not going to age very well. Like, you know, this will be useful information right up until the army box is released with, or the rules leak out or whatever, and then all the shit becomes dated. And so I wanted to approach it just slightly differently, to kind of talk through a mindset of how to approach building an army and then incorporate the battle box elements into that. So I took kind of a more circuitous route to build my lists, but I was hoping that by going through and explaining the logic of how, you know, how I went down the various rabbit holes and how I approached list building and list design, that might help give this talk a little bit more longevity and be a little bit more useful to people down the road when they're kind of clicking through this. So hopefully that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, go for it.
Great with it.
Yeah, I saw the thumb down from Tony. So one of the things that you always hear people talk about with miniature war games and everything is, yes, I saw that comment in the chat. Menoth was amazing. They're fantastic people. They protected folks. They're just all around good guys. You can tell because they walked in the light, and light is happiness. Whereas Tony's like darkness. So I saw that veil of darkness. Sneak that by me. So when you're talking about miniatures wargame, and you're talking about wargaming in general, really, there's always kind of this concept of interacting with your opponent and how that is a terrible thing to do. You never want to interact. Like, if I can play, like, I'm a pacifist. If I can play a game where I score all my points without doing anything to you, then I'm happy with that, as long as I get more points than you. I am really a pacifist at heart. That's why I play Protectorate. It's, again, peaceful people. But the idea is that you want to be staying away from your opponent. You don't want to be interacting. You want to be playing your own game. And so what does that lend itself to you when you're looking at building an army list and designing an army list? And the very first thing that you should look at for that is guns. Because I don't have to charge you. I don't have to worry about the move stat. I don't have to worry about speed. I don't have to worry about focus. I don't have to worry about a lot of resources. So can I build a list that shoots you hard enough that I don't have to get close? And then, again, I'm a pacifist. I don't want to have to shoot you. But if you're going to make me shoot you, I will. That's the way it's going to work. And so you start going from that into, before I even go down this rabbit hole of building a gun line and playing and testing it, sit down and work out the math. So I know, was it 40K? You get kind of that concept of min-maxing, and people kind of shit on that. They're like, oh, you're a min-maxer, you're super competitive. I look at it as expectation management. You see a lot of times in War Machine, someone charges their big buffed up Warjack in, and it doesn't kill its target. And they're just like completely tilted by that. That's something that they didn't like happening. And you just sit there and be like, well, if you actually figured out the math that you'd miss an attack or two, then it's actually you did exactly what you should do. And you just did not set your expectations appropriately. So to me, you should always do the math. It doesn't matter if you're casual. It doesn't matter if you're competitive, because it helps alleviate where I feel like are points of frustration. It helps kind of smooth out those times when you can get tilted by dice. And so I think that's just psychologically very important. And that's psychologically something that I really like to do just for myself. And I'll do it for my friends if they do it, because I'm bored and ADD and I'll just math any fucking army. It helps me out. So we want to take that math and we would combine that with ranged combat. And the question that we're looking to answer can I do enough damage that it's reasonable to look into building a ranged army? Like, am I literally, like, we get rid of terrain, we get rid of hitting, like, just literally, can I hurt you hard enough? And then we start, if I cannot answer yes to that question, we're moving over to melee. If I can answer yes to that question, then we're going to go over to a gun line, and I'm just going to play, ring around the rosy and stay away from you the whole game and just shoot you to death. I like to do that. That's why I always end up playing elves in every single game we play. It's true. It is true.
That is very true.
So again, pacifism. That's the key of this episode. So what I kind of listed down is, what are my targets? I'm looking at the striker. He's armor 20 with a shield. I'm looking at the courser, armor 18 with a shield. I'm looking at the jackal, armor 19. I'm looking at the tyrant, armor 21. So we're just going to take straight off armor 21. That's kind of our peak. And then, If I can deal with armor 21, I can deal with armor 20, I can deal with armor 19, I can deal with armor 18. You start at the top and you just kind of work your way down. So the next thing is you're like, hey, Kador, we love Kador. And can they buff shooting damage? Good news, absolutely not. So we're going to be raw dogging this. Fantastic. So then I just kind of went through, okay, we have every single gun on all the Dire Wolves and all the Great Bears. And you're looking at POW 15, POW 14, you're looking at rate of fire, D3 plus 1, volume fire rule, rate of fire 2D3. Where are we looking at? The other thing that I look at with my dice averages is, 7 on 2D6 to keep things easy. But I do actually a 10 on 3D6 to kind of undershoot my math. I know the actual average, quote-unquote, is a 10.5, but you want to round down. So again, you're setting your expectations up, so even if you come a little under average, actually setting yourself up to do a little bit better than you expect. So we go through all the guns, and realistically, you're looking at, on armor 21, the stuff that's either POW 16 or POW 15. The quad chain guns are just not efficient enough. because they're relying on a volume of fire, but they're a low enough POW that even with the special rule volume of fire and the rate of fire doing large volumes of fire, lowercase, that it just, it doesn't make up the difference, and you'd either have to do a bunch of boosting, a bunch of focus investment, which you don't want to do. So you really, you're looking at just kind of a couple of the big guns. And what I really settled down onto was the Dozer on the Great Bear being kind of my favorite, because it's a rate of fire 2 and a POW 15. And with that, if you put, you know, all the jacks start with their one focus, you put a second focus on there, you do two boosted damage rolls, 4 damage each on armor 21, 8 damage per jack, you slip, you know, a list of 3 of those guys together, and you're looking at about 24 damage, which is in the ballpark of severely crippling, if not killing, some of the other jacks, depending on your variants. So, and you can't actually put 3 of those into one list. We'll get to that in a second with the list building.
What's the range on that gun?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I have no idea. It doesn't matter. We're just looking at damage. I want to say it's pretty reasonable. Fortunately, they made their PDF insane to search through. So I'm literally scrolling through because that's what makes live viewing fantastic.
No, it's no problem. Sorry. Shouldn't have asked that question.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm assuming it's pretty reasonable. Battle Mace, Dozer is on the other arm. Range 10. So you got to get a little close. Which, again, fine. Because, I mean, anything, you're looking at, like, speed 5 and then a charge and 2-inch reach in order to reach it. But we're going to talk about kind of KDOR survivability as well. So, but right now we're just looking at range, damage, output. And then who do you put that together with? You got two of the worst-named casters in the world. Oh, my God. Boris Yuck and Epic Katarina. I'm assuming at some point Prime Katarina is going to come out. But right now we're stuck with E-Katarina. And yes, that was an elderly player joke.
Yeah, keep moving along, sir.
Oh, come on. You can date yourself by anyone who gets that reference. So, Boris Yuck is the one that people would... You'd think he's going to be kind of sexy. Because he's got Reload 1, he's a Weapon Master, and he has Crit Armor Piercing. The problem with that is when you start... You got to boost to hit, and then you're going to want to boost to damage if you get the crit. You have a less than 50% chance of critting on 3d6. So you're boosting to hit, hoping for the crit, not getting that, buying a reload, boosting to hit, hoping for the crit on that one, just evening out, and then boosting damage. You're looking at, like, he just is freaking drinking from the fire hose of his own focus, which means he doesn't have enough focus to power the jacks. So your crit is too unreliable, your crit is too focus intensive. Doing that is not going to work out well for you. Boris Yuck has other things that are not yucky at all. They're very tasty. But in this particular instance of a battle box and of trying to look at the range damage output of KDOR within the battle box, no. Bye-bye, buddy. You suck. These Boris suck now. So instead, we're back over to Zerkova, is essentially who Ekaterina is. They should have just kept the character, honestly. She is literally Zerkova. So the nice thing about her is that she actually has 7 focus, and she has a hit fixer, which we haven't even talked about that yet. So if you go back to our math, you're looking at 3 dozer guns. That's 3 focus spent, because each dozer gun has a rate of fire 2. You get the one basic to boost damage, and then the one to boost a second shot of damage. You're looking at 24 damage to an armor 21 jack. That's pretty solid. And then you have another 4 focus for the freeze spell. Off the spell rack, so then you're guaranteeing all of your hits. So hey, we have something there, and you know, we can rub a little sandpaper together and make a little fire. So you start looking at how to make the jack together. You got a battle mace for 7 points, the dozer gun for 6 points, and the cheapest head for 1 point. That works out to be 14 points, which is 3 of those is 42 points. That leaves you 8 points left over, and the cheapest direwolf is actually 9 points. So it's not at 50 points, it's not worthwhile to run 3 of the bears with the dozer gun. It's just the way the points work out, it's not good. And so you go on to option B, which is probably the better option, is you take the 2 great bears as above, so you still have your 2 dozer guns, each one of those doing boosted 8 damage. Then you take 2 dire wolves, You pop the cannon on them. You give them head C for a shield guard and a little scrap saw. That makes them 9 points. So you get 2 direwolves for 18, 2 great bears for 28. You have 4 points left over to play with for what other options. That still puts out your 4 boosted POW 15s. That still leaves focus on Katarina in order to do the freezing and whatever upkeep she needs to do as well. So that is, if you wanted to make a gun line, you take Katarina, you take 2 great bears, 2 direwolves, and you got a little extra spice to play with. So that was how I arrived at my first list, and that's kind of talking through the idea of non-interactivity with your opponent. Questions on that one so far?
I don't have any questions, but I do recognize that, you know, Huron basically mentions, you know, the Dozer gun is almost the exact same gun that the Decimator has right now. And we didn't see a lot of focus efficiency out of the Decimators either. So
it's a different game.
I you definitely are right about that. It is definitely a different game, but I worry that a Kador gun line, which one might argue a Kador list is not designed to be a gun list like a Signar list might. That it's gonna be, it can pull it off, but I'm wondering if the list built in a vacuum doesn't recognize complications like table presence. The third opponent in any list is the table, and if there's a significant amount of line of sight blockers on the table, how is that going to hamper the gameplay of a gun line list? Now, you do have the bases and stuff
your opponent
like that,
as much as it'll hamper you, for sure.
Assuming the opponent has guns.
True. But if they don't have guns, then they have to run to you. And one of the issues that I actually have with War Machine in general as a game is very static threat ranges. I know that you are threat range 12, so I'm going to stay 12.1 inches. And we're going to play that little song and dance but the thing is that, you know, I'm speed, you know, 4, speed 5, whatever the hell it is, it doesn't really matter. And I'm range 10, so I'm 14 inches, and I don't have to worry about charging, I don't have to worry about moving in a straight line. I can poke you from just slightly farther than you can poke me.
Yeah, you pretty much, if you get put up against a gun line, you have to either full send and just yeet your army across the table and try and get into engagement, or get blown off the table.
Yep. In which case, Katarina also has a control feat, so she's got a couple extra tools for that, in addition to be able to freeze things, knock things down if you get lucky with crits. So Kador has a couple extra tools to make your opponent's life difficult, and now I am making you come to me. You are now playing my game. Or I can just not go to you, and it all works out for me. It's very nice.
We literally had pictures up the entire time, and the minute I go and get something to eat and drink, you take the pictures down. Thanks, Kevin.
Here for you.
I mean, it's just perfect. So
absolutely busted. So, and like I said, that's just kind of my starting point, is even if it is a melee faction, I always start with looking at guns. Just because of that concept of putting the pressure. I want to put the pressure on my opponent. I don't want to have the pressure put on me. Like, Protectorate is an army of knights, and we're all still taking Reckoners.
No, I totally get the concept. I just worry if you're trying to square peg round hole this.
Well, I think the other issue is too, right, is like, I'm looking through the Signar options for, sorry, I'll say Storm Legion options for my range weapons, and they're just significantly more expensive. And they're probably that expensive, you know, for the reason, right? Because so you're not playing the static game as often. I can get 2 melee weapons for significantly cheaper than, like, one of my range weapons is 8 points. You know, that's pretty expensive for one weapon. That's not including, so, I think if you take one of the weapons that's 8, which is an Electro Bombardment, right, you still have to take a 1 point head, so it brings you up to 9 points. And then the cheapest other option you have is a 4-point shield or another 4-point weapon. So that's 13 points. It's the absolute cheapest range jack I can make, which is not terrible, right? Like, but it's not great, I guess.
I think part of it's in Kador. They're slightly cheaper.
And that's fair.
So, and their guns are less fancy. The gun is just there to basically smack you.
Yeah, it fires a big bullet and calls it a day.
Yep. So that's just kind of one direction I took. And then the other direction, everyone's favorite direction, is Bam. I mean, I think deep down, everyone who plays these games is Hawaiian, because we all love spam.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes. Not to mention Kevin keeps wearing Hawaiian shirts.
Why did we let him back?
I don't know. We're getting someone else.
Epic levels of dad jokes. The epic levels of dad jokes. So, in the Hawaiian spirit, Samoan power, what is the cheapest Jack you can make in K-Dor? And it turns out it's pretty fucking good. It's a direwolf with head C for shield guard. Right arm is an ice hammer, which is power 17, and the left arm is a shield. And you can also do a scrap saw and a long axe if you want for the arms for the same cost. That comes out to be 9 points.
Wow. So
you can take 4 of those for 36 points, which leaves you 14 points over in a 50-point list. You get 4 armor 21, POW 17, and they're buffable to POW 19, shield guard, girded jacks.
And that's still in the heavy category, right? It's not a true light. It's still a heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's got 32 boxes, I think.
I'm guessing field allowance is 4, which is why you're only bringing 4?
Yes.
Okay.
So, the other thing that you kind of ask yourself, in addition to spam a lot, is stat checking. In your K-Dor, what's the most durable? Can we make something that your opponent cannot deal with? Well, we're going to take a Great Bear. That's base arm 20. We'll give it Head A, which is aggressive and heavy boiler, which is straight up the best head. And this is where, when everyone's like, oh, you have so many jack options. I'm like, no, it's fake. You have a best one. This is, heavy boiler is the best head. You throw it on a shield cannon for 6 points. The other arm, you can do whatever the hell you want with. And then you tack iron flesh on it, and now you have an armor 24 jack. And if you take the battle mace for 7 points and downgrade the head to the 1 point head, then you actually have a 14 point jack, which will fit into your 4 direwolf list. So you have armor 24 jack, 4 armor 21 jacks, 4 of them have shield guard girded, and then they're all POW 17s, a POW 19, and then you can buff that to plus 2 damage.
That's fun.
So that way you have 5 jacks. I don't know that you can get through all that.
So I guess my question is for you is, right, then do they have ways to stop them from being pushed back, right? Because then, like, at that point, right, do you just start slamming or throwing and knocking down those jacks to get them out of, out of scenarios and stuff so that they're not viable? Because, yeah, you might not be able to kill them, but the game's necessarily not to kill all those things. Let's just try to throw them away. Throws look significantly more powerful than they were before, right? That's kind of a big thing, right? Is that throws are more powerful. We could potentially slam them out now, which their slam seems more effective than it was before. Them that way.
In what world is a throw more powerful?
Throw is more powerful now because now there's no deviation for it, right? So you can actually just throw them in a direction and it doesn't deviate to a random location. So you can be more precise with your throws than you were in Mark 3.
Do you not remember Minion's laser throw at the start of Mark 3?
Yeah, like, I'm talking about...
So the thing is that throws are still not scary because a throw doesn't do damage to me.
Yeah, I don't think throws are intended for damage, though. They are intended for scenario control. If you're sitting in a zone, I can walk up and throw you.
Battle box game. There is no scenario.
What are you talking about? Of course there is.
I mean, there's a fake scenario.
Yeah, just a scenario that I plan on winning.
Are 2 different jacks. Yeah. I only have 2 jacks and 2 casters to work with.
That's true, Steven. Steven Williams is pointing out, throw distance is random. I believe that can change. I don't know. I didn't know it's only D6. I didn't read the throw rules. So thanks for calling me out on it.
Yeah. Come prepared or get taken down.
You know, I just kind of go with the flow and hopefully, you know, I answer correctly. But no, so I feel like... I think that's what I would look at, though, right? If I see something that heavy, like, I think older version of me was like, I gotta go kill it, right? Well, then new version is, casters are a lot sturdier, so you're not necessarily going for a cash kill every single time. But maybe you look at those scenario elements. I can talk about some of the stuff, like, when I get to mine. Obviously, we're gonna go through Kevin's next, but, I think it's a really good list, right? It is definitely scary. That's a high armor that takes a lot of wounds, and it's gonna do damage, right? Because you're gonna have at least one focus. Just because of the power up rule in general. So
well, and I mean
the thing is at the end of the day, none of the changes that they made to the mechanics of Mark IV from Mark III have made it not a piece trading game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm bringing 5 pieces to trade with you. Are you bringing 3? Are you bringing 4? Can your 4 actually get through my 5?
And I think in a battle box game, it kind of hedges in slightly in Kato's favor, just from the perspective of they're only bringing heavies. Like, there's no mix of lights and FA. You know, they're going to bring 5. All the other factions can only FA 4, so they're always going to be one up on heavies. I think the downside is, and again, this kind of plays into there is and is not a scenario for battle for mangled metal games. You know, if we're just playing battle groups versus battle groups with the caster, we at 50 points we're not necessarily going to get a lot of play without the access to units and solos and stuff like that to play scenario. So it's a bully game. Who's going to bully the other person out until the point where they get an assassination run?
Yeah, I think we can agree that no one's a bigger bully than me.
That is true. You're the biggest bully. And I agree too, right? Like, you know, it's been pointed out like on our stream as well, right? That like we're talking about even a battle box. Technically, they're not battle boxes, right? Because there's not really a battle box. They're preview boxes, right? They're this one time thing that came out for Gen Con. They're probably going to come out for Gen Con next year for the Hordes version of it. But like Dusk won't get this version of a box, right? Most likely. They might, but I doubt it. You know, we won't see other factions get this version of a box, but we're looking at it, right, in the sense of, like, hey, these are the models we have right now for the pure Mark IV models. I wish we had some units so we could look at it and do something different, but we just don't. So this is kind of what we're limited to.
The funny thing is that you were picking on Kator incorrectly earlier when saying it's not a shooting faction. If you look at that army box, it's a shooting faction.
Yeah,
it is. You've got a bunch
shooting.
Of heavy infantry with heavy rifles. You've got a bunch of light infantry with light rifles. You got a bunch of jackasses with rocket launchers. You got a bunch of jacks with dozer cannons. And you've got 2 sleepy ass warcasters. Like, they are a shoot. They are a gun line. Kador will be a gun line.
I think units will, but I think, you know, I we'll see. I don't know. I think it is interesting, right?
Jacks,
like,
and all your units are guns, then you're a gun line.
That's fair.
Unfortunately, I mean, they have that 80mm solo. It's just another idiot in a tank with giant guns on it.
I didn't even look at their 80mm model yet. I didn't realize that they showed it yet.
It is abysmally silly looking.
Yeah, you sure it's not the Riot Quest one?
No, it's a.
I didn't
know there
was a difference between War Machine and Riot Quest.
No, it's a Winter Corp guy sitting in a tank. It's a literal tank. He's not being figurative.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a Riot Quest model. That's fine. Well, let's move right along then. Oh, thank you. See, someone agrees with me. Don't know what it was about, but I appreciate you agreeing with me.
Don't feed Tony's ego.
No,
it's like the animals at the zoo where you put up a sign like "Don't feed them."
Yeah, and you just feed me right away. That's why Kevin decided to take like the pictures off of me, right?
Tony doesn't eat food. He eats attention.
So, any final thoughts there, Gaston, before we switch over to some Morgoth?
I mean, I think all of this basically goes out the window the moment the starter box drops, because then you're going to be not looking at Jack Heavy, and going Jack Heavy skews this horribly with the casters that are released, because they do not have very good Jack support. The other thing that I've really seen, you know, going through and starting to do army construction is the spell rack structure. I like the way they've implemented the spell choices that they put in the rack. I do not like, because I think there's a lot of fake choices in there. Like, Kator only has one damage buff, which is on the spell rack, which means if I want to put any sort of damage buffs on my jacks or on my units in melee, I am sucking that into the spell rack, and that is my only damage buff. There is no range damage buff at all. So, like I said, I feel like there's a lot of false choices there, and that's going to be the same way for every faction. And I feel like the spells in the spell rack needed to be balanced better.
Well, and I don't think Privateer Press at any point in time created the quote-unquote battle box or the army box with the concept of mangled metal games. Like, we've kind of came at this discussion with, hey, people are going to have access to jacks and casters for now. So mangled metal is a potential. Let's talk about a mangled metal format. I don't think any of us believe mangled metal format's going to either be A, the intended format, or B, a format that has any longevity past once, more armies start coming out and actual units start coming out.
Yeah, and that's why, like, we'd even talked about doing a battle box game on Wartable, and the more I think about it, the more I almost want to wait until we have some infantry, right? Even if we get some more legacy armor shown, like, if I see a Signar legacy army, I wouldn't mind throwing that out, because at least I want to play it with, like, the new movements, right? Obviously, I really want to play, Mark IV models. I'd love to see some new Storm Legion stuff shown off, but I think for us, at least, we'll hold off on the channel until we see the units, because I think just how important those are going to be and those interactions are so much more important to see that getting done.
Do I need to get out the duck call?
Okay, we'll play then. If you want to go that way, we
I'm
will
pretty
play.
sure you heard this list and you'd be ducking me.
Okay, no, we'll play then. I will put a list together and we will play. Because luckily for you, I've already forgotten what your list is. I know
What
it's
do you mean
something.
you'll put a list together? You're supposed to put two lists together for
Yeah,
this.
clearly I have put two lists together. Gosh, all right, let's jump over to some Orgoth then, because we've got about 24 minutes left.
Ladies, you are both pretty. Calm down. So, I have to say that I came to the table looking at Orgoth, and I see a lot of similarities to what Herman was drawing with his, trying to scale armor and trying to potentially spam and so forth. And I was looking at the Orgoth battle box again, using air quotes here. And so I started looking at each of the casters and looking at the potential combos that they could play in. So again, I'm looking at this from the realm of a mangled metal format, where my first look was at Hurush, where his feat allows for no knockdown or
Wait,
no knockdown
what?
and
How do you say that?
Hurusk.
Hurush?
Hurusk.
Hurusk?
The
I think
answer is
it's
silent.
Russ. They just had a Primecast yesterday come out, and I believe that's when they announced that, what the how the pronunciation is. You can keep saying Haagen-Dazs if you want, but I believe it is Hurusk.
Oh, I want ice cream now.
You're
So, welcome.
again, he's got a feat that has no knockdown and anything within it gains plus three armor. Now, it also has the four up tough. However, we're talking mangled metal, and that four up tough only applies to faction models, so really not part of the equation of the thing. We're looking at a seven arcane caster, so a little bit of upkeeps, a little bit of handouts. And then on his spell card, he's got stuff like Thunderstrike, which is a four focus spell, which is insanely expensive, but there's a benefit to it. He's got Vanish on his spell card. And then when I was looking at their racks, I was looking at things that would allow me to fix Matt and potentially fix or help with armor skew. So I picked up Carnage out of his rack, which gives plus two to melee attack rolls with to enemies in the control range. And then Inviolable Resolve allows the unit to gain plus two to the armor and cannot be moved or pushed or slammed or anything like that. Now, I mentioned that he's got Thunderstrike, which is the forecast spell. He also has on his 2-inch reach sword, POW 17 sword, Bloodboon. So if he can pull off a kill, he gets a free cast. Now, in a mangled metal format, that's going to be extremely hard, but possible. In a normal format, I could see that potentially going off constantly, where he, charges in at his 2-inch range, usually probably with some sort of jack being his bodyguard to prevent, further charges or anything like that. Hits with that POW 17, kills an infantry model, or triggers a thunder strike, knocks something or slams something else back with the thunder strike, and then potentially spends one to vanish back three. So he has a lot of like zip forward, do something, disappear back. So I but it needs to occur when he wants it to. So now we start looking at the jacks. So when we're looking at the jacks, the very first one that I wanted to look at was the Tyrant. And the Tyrant I wanted to look at because the Tyrant has a harpoon gun. So from a head standpoint, I just went with the hunter head because it ignores concealment and cover, which helps to fix rat issues due to table presence. There could be an argument for relentless charge 2-point Pathfinder or the overtake, but the overtake helm is so expensive. I didn't see it really kind of carrying into the mangled metal and allowing me for the most out of it. But basically, I went with the hunter to address the ignore covers and conceals because I want to take the harpoon gun. The harpoon gun allows me to pull. So being this is on a heavy, it allows me to pull things around. And basically, my hope is that I'm going to hit something, I'm going to pull it in, then put some damage into it, and then hopefully Hrusk comes in, finishes off, triggers a Thunderstrike, not something, slams something else down. And in melee, it's still a POW 12, so it still has some melee presence if whatever gets pulled in doesn't die. And then for the other arm, I took the shield cannon, which is a 6-point upgrade. It's just like the harpoon is a 6-point upgrade. It does give you an additional +2 armor, so now we're looking at a Jack who is running at armor 21 naturally. But the cannon has a pistol, so again, if it still manages to be engaged with something, it gets to fire the pistol cannon off as well. But if we take Environmental Resolve and Feat and toss that on top of our cannon shield tyrant, we're basically looking at an arm 26 jack with no push, no slam, no knockdown for 14 points. I'm kind of okay with that. And because I like putting redundancy in this list, I actually just times this by two. So I have two of these harpoon cannon or harpoon shield tyrants. To allow me a little bit more control in the mangled metal, where I basically get a 15-inch range of pulling things in and placing things where I want them to go. Now, that's only 28 points of my 50-point mangled metal. So I started, and this is kind of where I draw similar parallels to what can we do to potentially spam out or get more bodies on the table. Obviously we could turn around and do four jacks and that would get us 48. I'm not necessarily thrilled about that. So I started looking at the Jackal chassis, and the Jackal chassis allows a couple different options to it. So the first one is I took a single, what I'm referring to as Jackal node, which is taking a Jackal with mace, assault shield, and arcane node head. So this puts it at a 7-point jack. The mace has beat back and crit dispel. The crit dispel's cute. It's not going to come up often with this caster. And then the assault shield again is a PAL 12, but it also has the +2. So my Jackal is basically going to be a 12-19 instead of a 12-17 with 26 boxes. The arc node allows a little bit of cutesy if I can trigger that Blood Boon, Thunderstrike, and potentially pull the arc node. And everybody knows that they love to engage arc nodes, which is one of the reasons why the beat back mace comes into play, is if I can trigger the beat back, have it beat back the thing that's engaging it, that frees it, if, as long as it's not base to base, that frees it outside of any 1-inch melee engagement ring. So it's only going to be engaged with a 2-inch melee. So if whatever's engaging, it's only 1-inch, I beat back, I knock it out, and I choose not to follow it up, that frees up the arc node to allow me to continue using it. And it's the Jackal node, if I'm not going to use the arc node, just kind of becomes the piece that starts the trade. I toss it up, it's a 12, 19, 26 boxes. Is it going to die? Yes, but their opponent's going to have to give something in return to deal with it. And if it's under feed, it's going to be a 12, 22. Which comes into the spam part, which is I'm looking at three different bloodthirsty jackals, and that bloodthirsty jackal is basically coming in at 5 points, which is again with the mace, clawed fist, and bloodthirsty head. So bloodthirsty gives you the increased charge. The claw gives me open fist and gladiator, so I'm getting +2 on the power attack and damage collateral damage. The mace gets me the beat back and crit dispel. But basically, these are just 5-point jacks that I can go in and charge in, deal with heavies under feet. They're going to be sitting at 12, tw 12 20s. And I can get some work out of them. They're not going to get a ton of work against a heavy. So if this is going into Herman's, four heavies list, I have to be very careful about how I'm controlling. But ideally, I'm looking to do that 15-inch threat drag on the harpoons to get me a little bit more control and potentially pull a heavy out of sequence of when Herman was planning on providing me that charge or doing that charge on his own. It's a little bit more control, and the feat and combination of inviolable resolve gives me the little bit ability to weather the counter strike when it comes in. It's not perfect, but we're dealing with a Mangle Metal format, so we're kind of limited in what we can do with it. So ideally, the list for Hrusk is basically going to consist of Hrusk, two armor tyrants, which is going to be the shield and harpoon tyrant variant, one jackal tyrant, and then three bloodthirsty jackals. So we're looking at four and two on light and heavy.
Pretty good. I like that. Man, you guys get some really cheap light jack options. The fact that your jackal, you said you can build him with 6 points?
Five points? 5 points.
All right. That's
I was actually
awesome.
Disappointed when I saw that it was FA4. I was like, oh, I really wanted to do this more.
Yeah, you see? Really... You are Hawaiian. Come on.
Hey, I may have lived there for like 9 years of my life, but I'm not.
I know. I lived there with you.
No, you didn't. We were passing.
Oh my gosh.
Same time.
So the other caster that I was looking at was Kishtar. So Kishtar of the Howling Silence. She's a 15, 15, 16 wounds, 6 focus. My problem is when I was looking at Kishtar is she felt like a shtick caster. So the big thing I noticed on her was Pandemonium is her feat. She basically gets 2 dice on the attack roll. And on rage attack, she gets +2 dice on the damage roll. In either scenario, you're dropping 2. So you go on feet, your attack roll, you roll 4 dice, you drop 2. Your rage attack, you get 4 dice, you drop 2 on the damage rolls. So
that's just for damage, or that's on hits?
So it's dice on attack, +2 dice on attack rolls. Ranged attacks, +2 dice on damage rolls.
Okay.
She also has Swift Hunter. So, you know, she gets 2-inch move after she destroys something. She does have a gun. She's got Death Whisper, which has Ricochet, which I think in a Mangled Metal format, I would almost encourage the use of the execution mode, because then it's not a case of, oh, your Jack ran across the table and punched my caster in the face. It kind of forces caster and caster engagement on a Mangled Metal. So it's like... Mm-hmm. The jacks are just the army that have to grind with each other, and at some point, the two two commanders have to come in and battle with each other. So the ricochet is cute because you can potentially ricochet off of another jack. So your first activation, you put some damage at range on a caster. It can't kill the caster, but it could potentially leave them on one, and then you use the ricochet from Death Whisper to trigger and do the actual execution mode. Her battle group comes with +2 range from fire group, and then she has open fire, so her battle group gains one range attack per model per round, or can make one range attack with open fire. Which, I mean, with Swift Hunter, that's cute. You know, it gives her some extra effort there. For her rack spells, I was looking at Carnage again because it's a mat fixer. I legitimately think that Orgoth are always going to need to take the mat fixer. And then Redline for the casters, just to give +2 speed, strength and speed to one of her tyrants. You have to be a little careful. Like one of the jacks that I have in here, I think I put hyper aggressive on, and you have to be very careful about hyper aggressoring out of the control range. But it's there, it's available. Now for her, I'm taking, so again, this is where I'm going into the shtick of it, is recognizing that you're going to be able to add 2 dice helps you to potentially trigger crits more often, because you choose the discard. It's not discard the highest or lowest, it's just discard. So I started looking through the things and started looking for things like on the mace. Whereas I said Crit Dispel was more cute with Hrusk, it's actually potential with Kishtar, because she can feat to control the crits more often. So she has Dispel, I don't want to say on a stick, but more available than other casters do. So I took a Jackal Note, but this time instead of the shield, it's just Mace Claw Arcane Note Head. So still 5 points. But it does have the Crit Dispel, it does have the Beat Back, and then the Claw does allow for open fist throw with Gladiator. The other things, the other two jackals that I took, so she's only got three jackals in her list. The other two jackals I'm calling the hunter jackals, and basically this is the hunter rifle at 5 points, clawed fist because it's cheap, and advanced deploy. Hunter rifle is basically a range 14, rate of fire 1, pow 13, crit brutal. So again, I'm leaning into that crit because of the feat, to allow me to potentially trigger crit brutal more often. And then I'm also leaning into open fire to allow me to fire this hunter rifle more than just once. So that gives me two. They get AD, sitting at 12, 17, 26 boxes, and they're just firing pow 13 crit brutals to a turn. And to round out the list, so this is going to be a five jack list instead of the six that we had in the last one, is I'm running two Ripper overtake Tyrants, which is basically going to be a Tyrant again with the Harpoon. We're taking the Ripper, which is a melee POW 17, but it comes with Crit Shred. So a critical hit will resolve making another attack against the same model. So we're triggering efficiency through potential crit triggers. And then Overtake Head, just from the perspective of, well, let's overtake. And this is going to be a beater jack. So the fire group allows my threat range on my harpoons in this battle group to be even further, because if I put red line on a jack and I have fire group up, then what used to be a 15-inch harpoon threat turns into a 19-inch harpoon threat, and we're basically going to drag that 19 in to do the Ripper's melee crit, and because we're dragging it in, we're guaranteeing that it's going to be in the control range. Again, just making sure that we're not overtaking or outside of control range, which I don't think we will. But again, like I said in the very beginning of this, everything that I just kind of described really hinges on a powerful feat turn, and that's when dice come in. So it can be very sticky in the sense of that may not be the best plan in all. So of the two of them, of the two list format on this Mangle Metal format we're doing, I'm probably going to be leaning on the Harusk list more than the Kishtar list, but the Kishtar list does have more range potential and more, this feat is not a counter feat. This feat is I go all in, do a lot of damage, and then hopefully that's enough to swing the game to that the attrition is in my favor.
Man, that's really good. So, like, have you ever, like, thought you prepared for a presentation, and then you probably realized you should have, like, actually went first, because everyone else was much more prepared than you were? I'm not saying I feel that way right now, but, we only have 7 minutes left, so I can't talk too long.
No, I never felt that way. Why?
Oh, that's great. No. I think a lot of those, again, make sense, right? Especially going into, like, a battle box game, or, I guess, a Gen Con preview game, right? That those lists make a lot of sense. And that's kind of what, I mean, we'll just jump in the Signar. Actually, hold on, do you have any final thoughts on your Orgoth right now?
I think Kevin's actually underappreciating his Krishpik list.
I
think
that's
much better than you think. Because I'm not particularly afraid of Harusk with Kador, because I have the four shield guards, so fuck your harpoons. And then Time Walk Feet. But Kishtar. She can reach out and touch. And, I was just talking about range stuff earlier, and so I'm a little biased. But I think you're underselling that. I think that's really well thought out.
I think it really is. It's really well done.
Yeah, just like I said, I'm worried that Kishtar's feat, that list in a Mangle Metal format is going to 100% depend on Kishtar having an amazing feat turn. Without it, she's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I guess I will jump in and talk about my Storm Legion. So the way kind of I went about it, right, is Storm Legion has two casters that came out. Wolf, which I think his spell list is really good. His abilities are awesome. I don't like his feat very much. And then we have Athena, which I think her feat is phenomenal. She has some really great abilities, but a lot of her stuff hinges on units. So I think she's a much stronger. She's more balanced out of the two, right? So first one I'm looking at Signar, right? With the Striker in particular, his build is he has three of his heads are 3-point costed. Now, they're pretty cool, right? You have one head that gives you resistance to lightning and a plasma nimbus, so whenever you hit him, suffers power 10 damage, which is kind of nice, right? But it's really great probably for units to get rid of them, so you can be a center point, hold down a scenario. But it's expensive. It's 3 points, right? You have another one where you get arcane precision, so if you use your normal movement to aim, you can ignore cloud effects, which is, again, really nice, but it's ranged. And it's 3 points. And then finally, like, overtake, which is okay, but again, 3 points. So for me, when I'm looking at the heads, the option I feel like is really easy to go through with the striker is relentless charge. It's 1 point, so it's significantly cheaper than all the other ones, and it helps me unlock a lot of my build, and allows me to charge through, get Pathfinder whenever I charge. So my next set was kind of like looking at different loadout options, right? And kind of similar to like what Herman said is, I don't like my models getting removed. So a lot of my choices, at least when I'm looking at playing with Wolf, who is definitely more Warjack focused, is going to be, what can I do to make my stuff not get hit or not damage as much? And then how can I put as much damage out there as possible? So one of my build outs was I made two of the striker jacks with a volcanic halber and voltaic halber, and the reason why I did that is because he has set defense, so he gets -2 to charges, so his defense goes from a 14 to, where if you charge him, his defense is only a 12. If you charge him, he goes up to a defense 14, which is really good, right? Then on top of that, I'm going to give him galvanic shield. Galvanic shield, because it adds +2 to armor. And if it is a, if I spend a focus point, construct models cannot charge him. So it just makes it significantly harder to go and get to that warjack. On the opposite end, right, is that spear is a range 2 and it's power 17. So that kind of goes me to look at what Wolf has, right? So Wolf's abilities, one is he has energize, which it used to spend 2 focus, I believe. You can move 3 inches. Now it's spend 2 focus, you move 2 inches. It's really good because these warjacks, all of them have a base speed of 6. So they're all moving faster than they were in Mark III, right? Signar got some upgrades, now they're all moving speed 6. So you're looking at a normal Warjack going from a speed 6 to all of a sudden a speed 8. They're going to charge to get those speed 11 in with a spear that's 13 inch. So it's 13 inch threat range, and with those 2 inches you can move him to get into the way, right? Now looking at some of his other spells, is he also has powerful, he has positive charge, right? Which that adds +2 to your attack and +2 to damage. So where the Striker is normally at a mat 7, that goes up to a mat 9, power 19. So, but with that spear also, whenever you are charging, you get powerful charge, you get +2 attack as well if you charge. So now all of a sudden he's a mat 11, power 19. And if you want to go look at the spell racking, right, we have Electrify on there, which for 2 more focuses and upkeep, he gets an additional +2 damage. You're looking at a Warjack that can move 13 inches, have a mat 11 attack, potentially power plus strength 21 damage, straight off the bat, right? So for things that are armor 24, it's dice -3 on a charge, which is really good, right? Also, these Warjacks are going to get a focus point for free, and all of them have the ability for the accumulator, so as long as they're within 3 inches of a Storm Legion warrior model, they can start with another focus. So all these Warjacks effectively are going to have 2 focus to go out, right? So it's going to move them up the board. They're going to be able to get up there. They're going to be able to damage stuff. And then I actually like the Storm Legion spell rack, because I have a couple different options, right? I feel like I'm going to be choosing shield every single time, right? I'm probably just going to choose arcane shield. It's +3 armor, right? So going back to that that striker jack, he's normal armor 18. With that shield, goes up to armor 20. With arcane shield, he now goes up to an armor 23. That's only one warjack, but that's really good, right? If you look at Athena, she can do some additional things to make them more hardy. But overall, it's really nice, right? So we're probably going to go over time, everyone. I apologize, right? But some other things, right, I could look at is, this is kind of why I like the spell rack, is when I'm looking at a list, right? So if I'm playing against Herman, I'm not going to play Bring Deflection, right? Because I don't really care about additional defense, right, for range attacks. But if I'm going to be playing against Kevin, there's a good chance I'm probably going to bring Deflection. Also, I can look at Jackhammer, right? So I can get that Warjack in there. He's power plus strength 21. And then I could potentially jackhammer him afterwards. Granted, if I have the jackhammer him, right, I couldn't have done energize beforehand because of the way how jackhammer works, but I could jackhammer him if he's engaged or something, kill whatever's around him, so then he can then get that charge. So there's a couple different options I can do for that, which I like that flexibility of this spell rack, because I have really at least four different spells that I might choose depending on what I'm looking at. If I'm going into a very high armor thing, I'm probably going to choose Electrify and Arcane Shield, or I might choose Electrify and Jackhammer. You know, I could go Arcane Shield most of the time, right? Most of the time I'm going to choose Arcane Shield, but there's chances where I might not always bring that.
So, if I may interject.
Yes.
Jackhammer's always the right choice. You get to a certain point where stacking POW doesn't help you, and you just need the attacks.
Yeah.
And Jackhammer gives you so many extra attacks, it's almost always the right choice.
And it's really nice, right? Because if you're looking at Wolf has 7 focus, right? So if you're going to energize, if you really want to blow all out, right? If you jackhammer, you won't energize, right? So if you're going to focus on jackhammering.
Well, you can run the jack, energize, and jackhammer.
You can run the jack, energize, jackhammer, and then also do potentially his other ability that gives him +2 attack, +2 damage, right? So you have these abilities you can do, right? So with him, if you energize, that misses down the 5 focus. If you decide to do positive charge, he has 3 focus left. That's still 3 attacks that you could have gotten, right? That's a 11 inch run plus another 2 inches. So that's 13 inches right there. And now you got 14, 15 because of his reach weapon. So you have a 15 inch threat with a warjack. That's really good. And honestly, with that, you can even move out of combat because you could have sacrificed your combat action, right, to disengage. And it doesn't matter because you're going to jackhammer the crap out of somebody. So really good options, right? Not to kill with anything else, right? My other really ability that I really like a lot in them is if I end up dropping the shield, right? If I don't see that there's a lot of warjacks out there, I don't think there's a whole lot of damage. I really like the open fist option because it gives me a ranged attack as well, a repulsor blast, and then a power fist. Now, when I come, there's other things with Corsair. Obviously, we don't have time, so I won't get into it. Apologize to everyone who really wanted this outstanding Storm Legion battle box report. But the one thing I do like about Athena that's different than Wolf is Athena, if she is in base-to-base contact with only one of her jacks, rules right now is all of her warjacks gain +2 armor. Everyone in her battleground gain +2 armor and cannot be knocked down. So all of your warjacks that are base armor 20 with that shield now go up to base armor 22. And then if you give them Arcane Shield, right, that's an armor 25 warjack, which is really, really hard to deal with. On top of, if you look at her spell, right, or her feat, right, Withering Storm, it's basically Starcross and Sinus of Potence together, which is, you know, models gain additional die on their attack and damage rolls. You drop the lowest, and then when resolving an enemy's roll, you discard the highest roll, right? So, like, that's really nice, right? Like, so everyone gets 3 dice. For me, I get to drop the lowest. For you, you get to drop the highest. So that weathers, that really changes a lot of the math. And again, the biggest hindrance with this Warcasters for Signar is they only get 2 rack options right now, at least the 2 that we've seen. So that does limit them. I would love to have 3. I'm not a huge fan of Hallowed Avenger on Athena, but I just don't like that spell generally. I'm guessing with units, it's going to be a lot better. But yeah, no, I'm really excited for both of them. I feel like with Battlebox, I'm definitely going to go Wolf probably 99% of the time. But I think whenever we see more of the units, I feel like Athena is definitely going to be my primary caster. So
yeah, but like we said earlier, you know, some of these Privateer Press did not build any of these casters with the intent of a Mangled Metal format.
Yeah. Really quick, I do want to hit Veil of Darkness asked a question, so I'm going to post up to you guys. We won't go too much longer, but what are your opinions on doing a 2-gun loadout? Is it too focus heavy at this point? So if you put a gun on both arms?
I mean, if you wanted to do it for one jack, maybe, but I don't think you would do it multiple times. I think you really need that mixed arms approach when it comes to your jacks, especially like in the Mangle Metal format, it's different because you have multiple jacks. But when we start adding in units and solos and stuff like that, the jacks that you're going to be run are going to be limited, and you don't want to have one jack who's their only thing is shooting.
Yeah, when I look at Storm Legion, right, the loadout that I would want to do is the Heavy Mega Bolter, which is 7 points. And then you look at the Electro Bombard, which is another 8 points. And then you give them Arcane Precision, which is another 3. So that's an 18-point Warjack, which just feels really, really costly. Granted, he's going to have 2 focus, right? Because of, again, his Accumulator ability and just the normal Warjack, 1 free focus. I don't know if I want to invest that many points into a Warjack that's going to not be impactful at some point.
So I think there might be something there for Kador.
Granted,
you can stack the 3 large shots onto 1 jack.
Yeah.
So that'll cost you 4 focus.
Honestly, what I would potentially do, right? Because looking at the striker, he has dual attacks, so he can make range attacks and melee. Granted, with the neither of them are pistols, right? So that's a problem. I was trying to think of the open fist. I know this is really great stuff right here. I'm trying to see if the repulsor blast is not. No, so, you know, you could punch and then shoot. It's nice. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Stefan, you know, really kind of it's, you know, it's an option. Give it a shot. Give it a try. See, maybe it works out for you. Maybe it doesn't.
Well, it's things like Energizer circumvents it, because you can just nudge him out.
Yeah, sure. I was just thinking being able to get all your attacks in, right? If I could punch and then shoot twice.
Yeah. I think Kador is actually kind of interesting, because I hadn't really thought of that, because I like having the melee backup. But I think there's actually something there.
Kevin, did you want to say something really quick before we wrap it up and I post the question?
No, I'd love to. I know what my question would be, but I'd love to hear yours.
Oh, well, my question is going to be for the group, right? So for the community, right? Question was already asked by Vale, right? But we'll kind of asked by Vale. What is your favorite loadout of the current Warjacks options that we have?
Yeah, 1 jack. Choose 1 jack. What's your favorite loadout?
Choose 1 jack. Was that going to be yours as well, Kevin?
No, I was actually going to ask them what's their 50-point Mangle Metal list. But we'll trim that down to what's their favorite jack loadout.
Perfect. All right, everyone. Do you, Gaston or Kevin, you will have any last things before we wrap up?
No, I think, you know, we're a little constricted because we want to specifically focus on the Mark IV models and what we can do. I certainly would not make any purchases based on this, until, you know, the starter box comes out and all that. I wouldn't go try to double stack any of your jacks just yet. But hopefully this was something that is actually useful to people with their playtesting, and it gives them different things to think about, different combinations to think about, and different approaches and strategies to the game. And that's really the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're going to probably hear this a lot. Don't form an opinion of Mark IV until you played a game of Mark IV or multiple games of Mark IV.
Yeah, Gaston.
You know, give it a shot. Give it a try. I think several of us on the channel are kind of waiting to see what those legacy lists look like and, you know, what the Dusk looks like and so forth. But it's a new game. Come to the table assuming it's a new game, and let's just play games and have fun. That's the whole reason we got into this hobby in the first place.
And I'd say I'm better. All right, everyone. So that is the end of our cast. Thank you for staying with us a little over an hour. We will see you all in 2 weeks.